Hey, this is Peter from the Dandy Warhols, and you are listening to The Vinyl Guide.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Peter. Much appreciated. Hey, everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. We are speaking with Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols, and we're going to be discussing all sorts of stuff, including the longevity of the band, the vinyl, as in where the hell are the vinyl reissues. Peter talks about opening for David Bowie, 9/11, the new LP, Why You So Crazy. We talk about Pete International Airport, as well as the Dandy Warhol's 25th anniversary shows in Australia this November. Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Newcastle, tour information, ticket links, and more at dandywarhols.com. Oh, and by the way, you vinyl maniacs, you need a record cleaner. Letting your records gather dust is not great, but sometimes using dish soap can be worse, especially for your stylus. Get a record cleaner made for cleaning records, not coffee cups. Get a Groove Washer record cleaning kit at groovewasher.com. Now, I use the Groove Washer every day, and it makes my record sound great, and it helps my stylus last longer. And man, that thing is expensive. Groove Washer record cleaners start at around $15 and go up to around $60 for a nice kit that will last you for many years. Now, this isn't one of those expensive record cleaners. Everyone can afford a Groove Washer, and even more so with this discount code. Use VinylGuide10 at checkout, and you'll get 10% off all items from groovewasher.com. Do it now. Groove Washer is a great Christmas gift too. So 10% off everything at groovewasher.com with promo code VinylGuide10. And with that, let's talk to Peter Holmstrom of the Dandy Warhols.
Ladies and gentlemen, here on The Vinyl Guide, this week we have, straight from the Dandy Warhols, about to come to Australia to celebrate 25 years, it's Peter Holmstrom. How are you doing today, Peter?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Now, you've got an umlaut in your last name.
Yeah.
Well, what is the correct pronunciation?
Oh, I couldn't even come close. My father is half Swedish. His grandfather came over to the States, so he doesn't speak Swedish. My grandfather didn't speak Swedish. I certainly don't speak Swedish, even though I spent a year there after college.
But you kept the umlauts, which is pretty rock and roll. So that
I put them back because, I mean, why not?
Yeah. That connotates a long O, I would think. Holmstrom. I think it's an O. Holmstrom. I mean, listeners will correct me, no doubt, but I think that's the correct pronunciation.
Quite possibly.
Who knows? Now, Peter, you guys are coming back to Australia in November. You guys are constantly touring, a perpetual nomadic tribe. You guys are always touring. Does it feel like that?
No, it does not. We lately have been doing a lot of short tours or sort of one-offs. It might seem like we're always touring, but most of the time we're at home. it's still nice. I would prefer to be doing more. There's a few places in Australia we're missing this time around. I'm still not really certain why.
Are you going to hang out in Australia a little bit longer? You're doing a couple days, one in Melbourne, one in Sydney. You going to hang out for a little while and maybe be a tourist for a bit?
No, there's never any time for that. We've got to get back home and keep working on all the other things. Got all sorts of projects going. So
you're still living in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah. Yeah, still here.
Now, originally from Portland, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but Portland, we hear the Vinyl Guide, we worship music and vinyl records, and Portland always seems to be like an epicenter of vinyl culture. What was it like growing up?
Well, growing up, there was pretty much, I mean, that's what you bought. I suppose there were 8 tracks, but I never had an 8-track player, and cassettes weren't really a thing until later. But yeah, it was always vinyl for me. I have a couple friends, and well, one friend in particular, and I used to, like, as soon as we could drive, would just drive all over Portland to all the record stores, you know, like hunting down records. It was great. It's always been an important thing for me. I was super happy that vinyl sort of made it a comeback, because it just feels right.
Yeah. What is it that you enjoy about listening to music on vinyl?
You know, it's that you have to pay enough attention to flip the record over. So you can't just walk out of the room. You can't just do other stuff. You actually have to pay a little bit more attention to it. And so you actually hear it in a different way. It's not like, you know, putting, you know, Spotify on and it's just, then it just sort of becomes background noise. You're focused on it. And I think, you know, it means more, I think, that way. Mm-hmm. Or it gets you in a different way. I'm not completely certain of all that, but you definitely focus on it more.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's the music tends to be split into at least 2 acts. And if nothing else, even if you put it on and go empty the dishwasher or whatever, you still have to reset yourself when you do that record flip and you key back into it. What were some of the records of your youth that you remember spinning and had heavy rotation in the Holmstrom house?
Well, the first record I really remember is my dad playing Dark Side of the Moon when I was, I don't know, pretty young, definitely like the 5, 6, 7 age. And I mean, back then it was the sound effects that really got me. And later I grew to really appreciate everything else about that record. Besides that, like later on, some Love and Rockets records, Jesus and Mary Chain. Those were super important. Pornography by The Cure was a big one, that I'm going back to now.
You're revisiting it now.
Going
with new eyes.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely with just appreciating the songwriting skill and the way instruments are put together to create those songs. It's just they're kind of uniquely sort of a cult band that fills stadiums. So anyway, I don't know how they did that, but kind of got the best of both worlds. And I love the textures and the layers of sound on their records are fantastic.
Do you have a large record collection?
It's a decent size. I've sold a couple or given away a couple record collections, so I don't have much from when I was a kid. Some of those records survived, but a bunch went other places. Mm-hmm. And then when CDs happened, and we were moving around a lot, in the 90s when we were getting courted by the record labels, we got to raid their cabinets all over LA and New York. And so CDs were more the thing. So, been building up a lot of that slowly, on vinyl. Yeah. I'm trying to be a little bit more selective because it's heavy and takes up a lot of space.
Yeah. What are some of the records that tend to get played more than others?
Spiritualized, Black Rebel, Jesus Mary Chain, Primal Scream. I put those records on all the time. And yeah, now lately The Cure, some Susie and the Banshees. I'm trying to I'm trying to find what the certain things I like in her catalog or their catalog.
Would you consider yourself a bit of a record collector? Like, do you go out of your way to go record shopping and look for things that can be certainly along your taste, but are also things like first presses and those sort of collectibles?
No. I buy records so I can listen to them. I don't want, I've got that collector mentality, and I fight it constantly, because I want to, you know, use the guitars I collect and all the equipment and read the books that I collect and listen to the records I collect. So yeah, it's not first pressings or mint condition. It's just playable. And yeah, I'm a bit of a completist, so if there's a thing I like, I try and get everything. But it's a battle between the desire to own everything and then the not wanting to own anything at all. And so it's just a happy medium. It's definitely leaning towards trying to have everything more than the other way.
Yeah, that's good that you know that about yourself, because you could very easily end up buying every single album from a band that you like, whether you like the record or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely the way I was in high school. Mm-hmm. Like everything, every offshoot, every side project. Back then, it seemed like sometimes records were pressed differently in different countries, so you could, if you really got in deep, you could find the differences between different countries, or different pressings even. Yeah, I definitely went down that rabbit hole a few times.
So when you started playing music, I guess your budget went from purchasing recorded music to purchasing instruments.
Yeah, definitely. Things that helped me make music became the main focus for, and so, you know, I've got quite a large collection of equipment.
In your record collection over the years, I imagine you've had the opportunity to start to collect things that are unique and personal. Like, for instance, I understand you toured with David Bowie for some time. Do you have any sort of collectibles or items from that time, from David, that you have as part of your collection?
I have guitar picks from the whole band, and I have a tour whatever brochure thing that's signed by everybody in the band. The Bowie stuff was very, very special. I had been a huge Bowie fan, like pretty much as soon as I discovered him, in high school, and had all sorts of different, I mean, not everything, but definitely a lot of his stuff. A lot of some bootlegs too. I've managed to hang on to those. So I've got a few rare Bowie bootlegs. I should have brought them with and had them sign them, but I wasn't even thinking about that. It was just too exciting that we were going on tour with him.
Well, it sounds like you had a lot of personal interaction with him as well.
Yeah, definitely, a little bit.
What sort of learnings did you get from David Bowie?
Nothing directly from him, but on that tour, I realized right away that this was a very unique, you know, opportunity. And so to be able to watch Bowie every single night for 2 months. So I watched every single sound check and every single show. The professionalism of his band made a huge impact on me, and I really, really started to focus on improving as a musician on that tour. I'm still not done. Still got a long way to go, but that was a very important thing. Both the guitar players on that tour were very nice to me, and I learned a lot just by watching both of them, both Earl Slick and Jerry Leonard, two completely different guitar players. I definitely fall in the Jerry Leonard side more than the Earl Slick, because he's a monster, but both very inspiring.
The things you took away from them, was it more of the discipline of touring, the technique of playing? What was it that really awoke within you when you saw them?
Both of them were just masters of what they, you know, what they were, their role in the band. You know, Jerry was more the effects and the textures, which is kind of my thing too. And then Earl did all the leads and was just a very accomplished, more traditional guitar player. But it was just their mastery of their instruments that was the thing that I took away. I wanted to be more like that instead of kind of just winging it like I felt I had been doing up until that point.
They were almost like mentors for you then.
It's hard to put that, to say that, because it was just something I got from watching them. You know, there was some interaction, but there was never, I don't think the mentor.
Come here, young man. Let me tell you about this. Yeah.
No, it was, they were encouraging and had nice things to say. You know, I was able to keep contact with both of them for a little while, but that's fallen off in the past few years. But.
This was the reality tour that you were opening for. Were you there the night he got hit in the eye with the lollipop?
No, that was like later on. He was doing a tour of some festivals. I think it was the following year.
Okay.
Yeah, because he got hit in the eye with the popsicle, and then later on had a heart attack or some medical emergency, and which stopped him touring for good.
Yeah, his last live show. Yeah, he was that tour. So that must have been amazing watching him. Also, sound check and everything. But look, we're talking way too much about David Bowie. I want to hear about the Warhols. So
yeah, I could go on with the Bowie thing for sure.
So with Dandy Warhols, now it seemed like you alluded a little bit to the fact that in 95 or 94, in the mid 90s, you were being courted by various major labels, and around the time of Dandy Rules OK album.
Yeah, right after that came out.
And eventually signed to Capitol. Now, was the relationship with Capitol a good one? Was it healthy, or did the band have challenges with that?
Yeah, we had challenges. A lot of it, I think, could really, really come down to poor management. Not that we would have listened to them anyway, but. We had very strong views of how things were supposed to happen, and the record label had their own ideas, and a lot of times it you know, conflicted, and we weren't really great about dealing with them in our way of dealing with them, so you know, probably burned a few bridges. But the annoying thing about Capitol Records back then was every time we put a record out, there was a different president of the label, which meant all new people in almost every department. We managed to keep our A&R guy for the into 13 Tales. I don't think he made it through 13 Tales. Mm. Or no, sorry, into Monkey House. I don't think, no, he wasn't I can't remember. Anyway, somewhere around the Monkey House era, he got canned or left or whatever, and somebody else came in. And, you know, so it was like some of the presidents got us and, you know, accepted that we were going to be this weird little thing that, you know, and just let us run. Others like wanted to be a little bit more controlling. And so there were more battles that, it was a challenge the whole time.
Cause it seems like right off the bat, you know, you guys go to Capitol and the first album that you recorded for them was shelved. You had to re-record it, which the Dandy Warhols Come Down.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those things that we put in the sort of bio for that record, which we regret because we're the ones that shelved that record. We weren't happy with it. Not the record label. I'm sure they weren't happy with it, but we definitely weren't happy with it. And we chose to start from scratch as opposed to reworking what we had already done. So, yeah, okay. it didn't get off to a super smooth start, but a fair amount of that was our own fault.
Fair enough. You're young, you're a new band, new to the industry. Yeah, you're going to have some missteps here and there. Overall, you've been all right.
yeah, we got through that.
Now, the Dandies seem to have taken a less conventional, but I guess ultimately a pioneering method of getting your music out there using, you know, not just radio, but TV, video games, and other forms of mass media. Is that something the band felt comfortable with? Was that an expected or an unexpected approach?
You know, I think the first things to come up were some movies, and that seemed fine. You know, music, there was music and movies, and then maybe some TV shows, and then advertisements just seemed like just the same thing. It's like, you know, they wanted to use our song. They weren't asking to change the song or to, you know, do anything like that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's like, it helped pay for things.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't ever a hard decision. It was always just sort of, yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we own our own studio and can continue to work and create in a way we're comfortable with. So,
going to the album Welcome to the Monkey House, rumor mm-hmm. has it that recording of that album began on 9/11. Is that accurate?
Sort of. That's the day we got the keys to the space that we ended up using, maybe the day before, but that was the day we all showed up to start setting up, and there was some demolition that needed to happen, and that was a cathartic way of dealing with that day. So yeah, I guess, I mean, that's pretty accurate. Nothing was recorded that day, but yeah.
Now, your latest album, Why You So Crazy, is on Dynalone Records. And Dynalone is a boutique label. They put out some great stuff, and Dandies seem to fit quite well inside that fold. Previously, the Dandy Warhols had put out some of their own records. Do you feel better as part of a group of individuals on a label like Dynalone versus doing it yourself?
Well, you know, the doing it ourselves always involved licensing the record to a label. So it's like we never did any of the label work. So it doesn't really feel that different. I can say, though, that Dynalone, it's nice having their machine just sort of take over and do stuff. They've been pretty great. So, no complaints there.
Mm. And from album to album, it always seems that Dandy Warhols is exploratory, never sitting still. It's almost like a continuous reinvention album to album. Does it feel like that to the band? Do you have a vision of what the album is going to be before you start recording, or are you sometimes surprised what it was that was created?
It's more lately. It's more that I'm surprised that the album actually sounds like an album, because there's always like there's so many like variety of different influences and ideas coming together, especially on this last one. Sometimes there's a, you know, for lack of a better word, a theme that we're trying to do. And, you know, in the case of this machine and the Stortland, they kind of to me, those are similar records where we're really kind of trying to strip things down and do what we do without layering 12 tracks of guitars on everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes there's ideas like that that are we do our best with. But yeah, rarely does it actually affect every song on the record, because ultimately each song needs to be considered for what it is and what it needs to become its best version. So.
Mm-hmm. Does the band take time off in between albums to, I guess, feed the tree, to replenish and to develop a new direction?
These days it's really like a constant, like if we're not touring, there's somebody's recording or writing or something. There's always something going on. The next record is already in motion. It might take another year, but you know, it was started earlier this year. If I think maybe even there's a song that was from the last record that was started back then. So it's just, you know, it's where things fit. But there's always recording going on. That's the nice thing of having your own studio.
Now, you've also got a side project, Pete International Airport. Are you still recording and potentially touring with Pete International Airport, or where does that fit in the routine?
I'm always working on stuff for that. I'm trying to get another record done at the moment. I'm at the wrangling of singers part of the process. I've got a good collection of songs that are in a pretty like 3/4 complete versions, and now I just got to get people to sing on them. Got one back already, and it's fantastic. So I'm super happy about that. We'll be touring, of course. Hopefully get to Australia this time around too, or you know, whenever. It's always hard because this is my project, so it's my bank account, and it's been really hard to get booking agents interested in taking a chance on a new band. But we had a great tour in Europe, and we did some dates with Black Rebel here in the U.S. and it went over really well, and the live band's fantastic. So,
just saying that on this show, you may get some phone calls from some tour managers.
Fantastic! I'm looking for stuff because Dandies don't tour as much as I'd like, since I'm the only one in the band that doesn't have kids. So, I would like to be playing shows more.
Yeah.
Give me a call.
Or alternatively, you could have my kids if you really feel lonely at all and you need something to do. I'll ship them over there.
I've got a niece and a nephew, and that's perfect.
Okay. Well, look, I've trained my kids not to screw up the record player. So,
start.
I'm just saying, they've got U.S. passports and everything. I could have them on a plane this afternoon. Please, Pete, free me. No, quick one too. Just speaking of records, Dandy Warhol's. There's quite a few records in the discography. Well, quite a few albums, I should say, where the records have gone out of print. Welcome to the Monkey House, yeah. Auditorium, a couple of others. What are the plans, or are there any plans to kind of bring those back to the vinyl format?
Like Auditorium's never been on vinyl. So Zia and I specifically in the band, we're really, really hoping to get a box set or at the very minimum everything on vinyl for our 25th anniversary. And unfortunately, Capitol Records has been really, really hard to deal with. I don't understand. It's just, they'd get money. It's, maybe not a lot, but, you know, we were looking to try and release art, you know, do everything essentially. And I don't know what the holdup was. Okay. So, eventually we will prevail and things will be on vinyl though, for okay. sure.
All right. Yeah. It's a win-win. So come on, Capital, pull your finger out and, let's yeah. see some of these things on vinyl again. So Pete, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide and sharing with us the stories, the history, and of course, some vinyl chat on Dandy Warhols. I want to, again, just point people's attention to dandywarhols.com. There's 25th anniversary shows. They're coming down here to Australia, 3rd of November in Melbourne, 6th of November in Sydney. But of course, there's all sorts of other dates out there as well. So make sure you keep your eye on dandywarhols.com. And let's hope that Pete International Airport is again firing up and flying around the world as well. There's also the Dandy's latest album, Why You So Crazy, on Dynalone Records. Check that out. And again, Pete, thanks for coming on the show and much appreciated, mate.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, Pete, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate. Much appreciated. And enjoy your stay in Australia. Again, everyone, Dandy Warhols, November 2, 3, 6, and 10, Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Newcastle. All info and ticket links at dandywarhols.com. That's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks again for tuning in. If you enjoy what we do here at The Vinyl Guide Podcast, consider becoming a patron of the show. Patreon.com/vinylguide. You go up there, not only are you supporting this show, but you get access to exclusive content and secret episodes, all sorts of fun stuff up there. Patreon.com/vinylguide. We'll be back with a brand new episode shortly, so until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.